And so that three-way border just gives GMs all sorts of opportunities for conflict. Don't tell me about who he gets along with or what he's doing. It's what's going wrong or what is happening in this area that really could drive people to use it.
Well, welcome back, guys. It's good to see you. It's been a few months. Actually, no, we did Q1 Harn Quest in March, so not all that long ago. But returning, we've got Brent Bailey, Kerry Mold, and Richard Luscheck. Brent, remind us who you are.
So my role with Columbia Games and the Harn Material is I'm the team leader of the group that does the creative work, and I also do the editing and layout and project management, essentially. And as with what we're talking about today, the Kingdom of Kandae, I did a decent amount of writing as well.
Excellent. And Kerry Mold, who I've got next on the screen here.
Hi, I'm one of the writers for the Harn Writers Group. I've done some writing in this article, and I've done a lot of writing on some of the other locations in Kandae.
Excellent. And Richard, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I basically just draw everything. I'm the illustrator, and I like to think of myself also as the person in charge of morale. So I try to make jokes and entertain as best I can with the group. So, but mostly I do all of the interior art and the covers these days, trying to do justice to what Eric Hotz did in the very beginning. So I've been doing it for about 20 years.
Excellent. Well, we will be digging into some art. We'll be digging into the various articles. Today we're talking about the Kingdom of Kandae, which has just dropped on Kickstarter as of the recording of this video. Tell us a little bit about this module. What's it about? Why do we want to pick it out of the pantheon of other Harn kingdoms? What makes Kandae special?
How much time do we have? So I could talk about Kandae for a long time, but Kandae is one of a it's a kingdom in Harn's southwest corner. And what sets it apart from some of the other kingdoms, from the other realms, is that although it is a feudal, a kind of typical medieval feudal kingdom, its positioning on Harn, and both as a product and on the map, is that it's clustered with two other kingdoms right next to it. So where Kaldor off in the east is kind of by itself, and Meldrin's kind of by itself down in the southeast, and Chibisa is kind of isolated and a lot surrounded by wilderness and tribal peoples. Kandae is bordering two other realms, Rethem and the Thardic Republic. And so that three-way border just gives GMs all sorts of opportunities for conflict. So, in Kaldor, the conflict is inward. It's a weak king, and there's a lot of strong noble families that are kind of jockeying for position for a potential eventual civil war. But in Kandae, a lot of the conflict, a lot of the opportunity for conflict is outward facing. So there's strong religious differences between the Kingdom of Kaldor or the Kingdom of Kandae and the Kingdom of Rethem. It's a classic, good versus evil situation there. So the Loranian forces in Kandae and the Agrican forces in Rethem, and there's low-level skirmishing going on pretty constantly. There was a war not that long ago with between those kingdoms, and it could break out any time. So that is one area of conflict, and the other is the Thardic Republic, which isn't a feudal realm. It's kind of an alien, to the people in Kandae. It's a very odd way of thinking. And just in the last 7 years or so, there was war between those two nations, and Kandae lost a good chunk of land to that lost essentially a big chunk of a barony or an earldom to the Thardic Republic. So there's a lot of political tension there as well, although they're tentatively at peace, that can change. And so there's a lot of tensions on that three-way border because Rathim and Kande aren't great friends either. So it's kind of a who's supporting who against who at any time, and kind of gives GMs a lot of opportunities for kind of conflict on an international scale as opposed to more internal in some of the other kingdoms.
Tell me a little bit about the goals for this Kickstarter. You know, we're rounding out the Kingdom hardbacks. Part of that is a revisit on a lot of the historic text that has existed for over 20 years. Sure. What was the state of that, you know, for lack of a better term, that article? And where did you want to take it? What did you want to embellish and build on?
Sure. So like the other Harnic kingdoms, Kande was originally published in the 1980s. And then in the early 2000s, Columbia Games started a process of kind of revitalizing or revising and republishing some of them. And Kande was the first one they did, and that was 20 years ago. But that revised version was, to me, just a little step in a lot of ways, a little step above what they had before. There was some new material, a lot of new art was added 20 years ago. But as other kingdoms were done over subsequent years, we were putting in more and more and more new material. And Kande didn't have that. So it was just, so for this book, the goal really was to bring Kande up to the level of all the other kingdoms that had been published over the last, 10 years, 15 years, kind of take it that step beyond where the team that worked on it 20 years ago kind of saw it. And so that's what we've done, is really flesh out a lot of parts of the kingdom that had only just barely been touched on. And we did the same thing for two of the, so in the book, you don't, it doesn't include just the kingdom part itself, but there are four settlement articles. There's the city of Aleth, and then three castle towns of Darissa, Manicod, and Sarkum. And two of those, Darissa and Manicod, had barely gotten any upgrade since 1986. They had been re-released, but with practically just the content that they did from 1986. So those two for this book have a lot more material than they have ever had. So that was the goal for this book, was to kind of bring a lot of those pieces of Kande up to the standard of the material that we publish today.
Yeah, and when you were looking at the available articles set in and around Kande, what drew you to those specific locales? Why did they make the cut?
Sure. So Aleth is the only city in the kingdom. It's the biggest settlement. It's the kind of the center point for a lot of what goes on. So it's the economic hub of the kingdom. But Darissa is the king's seat. So it's a castle town, but it's where the king is most of the time. So it's more of a center of government than Aleth is. Menacod is up north near the border with Rethem, and it's the stronghold of the Order of the Checkered Shield. So it's a Loranian fighting order that holds Menacod. And so it's the base from which the Loranian forces battle or defend against the Agrican forces from Rethem. And then the last one, we originally had looked at Selvos, which is another, it's a coastal settlement, but it's kind of too close to the north. It's north as well. And so it was pulling all the attention north. And so we ended up going with Sarkum, which is down in the southwestern tip of Harn. and it's more isolated, but it's a maritime, it brings in more of a maritime feel to it. And because it's isolated, it opens up a lot of opportunities for drawing GMs and user and players down to a different part of the kingdom than the others. So they are kind of geographically spread from north to south. So that's why those were the ones that made the cut.
Another Excellent. Key Sorry. Point is Sarkhum is also the seat of the king's father. So importantly in Candae, the queen married the king's father, who was the leader of a pocket kingdom, basically a petty kingdom, and in doing so brought his petty kingdom into Candae. In return, his son gets to be king. So it's a nice little deal, but dad is still alive. And dad still feels the need to manipulate and get in the background. So the Earl of Sarkhum is a kind of notorious figure in Candae as a manipulator. And he's right into the politics. So having his castle included in the book also gives an opportunity to bring in some of that internal scheming. And one of the points I wanted to make about Menakaud is it's sometimes called the Key of the North, kind of along the lines of like important castles in England or in the Holy Land. You know, it is the Croix de Chevalier of Candae. So it's a critical location, and huge numbers of troops sent go there every summer and for the campaigning season. So again, it's offers a lot of great opportunities for GMs who want to have more of a military flavor to their campaign, even though the Checkered Shield is quite a powerful organization, they would still need to hire some mercenaries, maybe some scouts, some folks that might want to take you up to the border and check things out, deniable assets, so to speak. So lots of opportunity for role playing there.
And the illustration that's over Richard's shoulder there is one that you might want to show that is Menakaud Castle. And I don't know if you can make it out from here, but there's a hanging going on in front of it. And it was kind of to illustrate so that Menakaud, being a military stronghold, for a religious fighting order, it's not the most tolerant place. You know, there's a lot of zealous religious folks in the north because they're kind of always worried about being invaded from, Wrethem and that sort of thing. And so strangers are not welcome, especially if you are of a non-favored religion, that kind of thing. So it's just because Candae is seen by a lot of people as a good kingdom, that only goes so far. It's like, what does good mean? And if there's it's not the most welcoming, all nice flowers and rainbows kind of place that some people kind of seek to portray it as.
Right. And while we're sharing the screen here, I think it's worth illustrating that this blue text here is all new material, new personas. I'll scroll back up to the main article here.
I just would say it won't be blue in the published version.
It's not blue.
This is the draft, or not the draft, but the proof version.
Yeah, this was a version I put together to show, for you and for the publisher to use as kind of promotional material and stuff to show just how much new material there is in this book. So all the blue stuff is new with this version.
There's a ton of world building put in here. There's some basic stuff like that page that was already present. We got to blast through a bit of the history, but I was seeing full pages, like, you know,
history.
There were five sentences on this one previously.
These were shown here, the different settlement articles. Like I said, this is the stuff that's in black was what was in the previous version. And we had all sorts of space on these pages to add more. And so, you know, I kind of went through and figured out what we needed and then put out the call to the other guys on the team and said, you know, I need a lot more on Kutan. So who wants that one, or who wants this one or that one? And so people just kind of volunteered, did a little bit of research in what's going on in that area, wrote me up some, you know, some suggestions. And so that's where all that new stuff comes from.
Yeah. And I'll cut this question if you don't have anything off the top of your head, but is there anything that blew you away when it came back? When you put out the call and then you got, you know, the first ideas back?
I was impressed with a lot of what these guys came up with. And there was at least, there were, I think, two different people who said, you know, I've never really read much about Canday, but now that I've looked at this and wrote this, I want to run a game there. You know, it was like, because especially some of these settlements, that they're not sexy. They're not, they don't just immediately jump out. Like Manicod has a point, you know, Manicod is, you know, a very obvious use, but some of these other ones, they're kind of just more sleepy backwater towns, but you read a little bit about it and it's like, well, I could do something interesting with that. Or, you know, what is the sheriff getting up to? If it's one that's, you know, held by a sheriff, it's like, what are some conflicts here? Because that's really what everybody was kind of looking at, is don't tell me how the baron who holds this or the sheriff who holds it, don't tell me about who he gets along with or what he's doing. It's what's going wrong or what is happening in this area that really could drive people to use it. And, you know, people came up with all sorts of interesting things. I don't know right off the top of my head, you know, anything that really, but there were a lot of really cool ideas that people had. Like one of them that, I don't want to say the wrong person, but I'm pretty sure it was Matt Regner who said, came up with a thing where there's a chair in an inn, and it's been there for centuries. You know, this is a very old inn, and this chair's been there. No one remembers where it came from, but anyone who sits in it dies within a very short time. So there's no answer to it. There's no, you know, we just kind of put that out there, that is it real? Is it cursed? Is it just coincidence? And people really kind of like, oh, I like that idea, that even the baron who owns, you know, who holds the town, owns the town and stuff, he'll visit the inn, but he won't sit in that chair. You know, he's not going to tempt fate, because who, you know, but that was one thing that, you know, it's something that a GM who's reading that page, it's like, oh, okay. So if the party goes to the inn, somebody may go to sit down, and it's like the regulars will be like, whoa, 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 you might not want to do that. And it's like, could that lead to something? Could it lead, you know, could somebody be all, well, I'm going to do it, I don't believe that anything's going to happen. Well, then what does happen? So it just kind of, there's that sort of thing that we dropped in everywhere, just these cool little things that could happen in that place.
You know what I love about that? They haven't gotten rid of the chair.
No, and I think there's something in there where it's like, there have been attempts to get rid of the chair, but it shows back up.
Mm.
Yeah. So
one of the sites that I really enjoyed the expansion of is Quivum. It's an important religious holding of the Bishop of Paranor, and it had a there was a adventure done in one of the Harn lores quite a few years ago about a werewolf adventure. And it was set in Harchesa Abbey, which is one of the subordinate settings for, or subordinate abbeys from Quivum. And so we were able to add that into the site article to kind of remind people of that. And then we were able to expand the bishop, who has a certain resemblance to a certain famous person who shall remain nameless, but give me some more cowbell. So we were able to add a little bit more about his politics and things that are happening in and around, and the fact that he has a group of fanatics, fanatic young priests who travel with him, and kind of to make him a little more interesting as a possible protagonist or antagonist in your campaign, because he feels quite the ability to dabble wherever he wants. He considers all of Retham and Tharda part of his bishopric, and feels quite at home with meddling in their politics and sending agents and such. So he has a great potential to be a fun character in anybody's campaign, whether for good or for ill.
Yeah.
No, that, well, one, I love that art. That's hilarious.
Thanks.
I'm going to, is that a new one, or is that one of the originals?
That's
they did?
An old one. It's interesting. Cause I try, these days I don't try to make the art look like anybody. I mean, I don't want it to look like, I'll do it in the style of, but I did that a long time ago, and I believe it was for a fan article on that location. And the person asked specifically that I make him look exactly like the actor, who obviously will not be named. But I try not to do that generally. For me personally, it pulls me out. It feels too anachronistic, and I don't like to do it. And I wanted to change it for this, but everybody was like, "We love this guy. Don't change it. We're going to keep him." And so anyway, he remained. And I'm glad you like it. But
he's one of my favorites. I've used him in several campaigns, and he is a great image to have, him riding in, and his group of fanatical followers, and then he has that certain way of speaking, which everybody finds hilarious. Cadence, yes.
Yeah.
Now, if you can stick the landing on that, that's an instant fan favorite,
right?
NPC.
Exactly.
You've had a whole bunch of hardbacks wrapped up, shipped out the door. What were some of the lessons that you learned from that you were able to apply here? Just tell me a little bit about some of the evolution of either the process or the building of these books.
Canday was actually in preparation more than a year ago. It was actually supposed to be, I can't remember what order it was going to be in.
It was supposed to be at least two hardbacks ago. We brought out Tharda for sure, and I think we maybe brought out, I'm not sure, it could have been Retham, I'm not sure, but
yeah,
well, we brought out a couple that were supposed to be ahead of it.
It was going to be done, and then Columbia Games Grant said that they wanted to do the Harnworld, the big Harnworld book, which wasn't going to be done until after all the kingdoms. But he said, "Hey, we're getting really good traction with these kingdoms, and now that we've got a handful of kingdom books that we can promote with the overall setting book, I want to do that one first." So that kind of pushed Canday and the subsequent ones back by a year. But I had started getting that one ready. And so Bill Bean, who does most of our mapping these days, he had already done the color maps, the color floor plans for Menacaud and Derissa and all those. So he did those like over a year ago. And I had started getting feedback from people on some of the new content. And they had, so that a lot of that was done a year ago. And then I had to shelve it to do the Harnworld book and some other things. And then finally came back to it. And it was like, I haven't looked at this stuff in a year. You know, I don't remember where. So had to kind of go back and refresh things. But having done the other books, it really kind of drove home that this one needs to be as special as those. This one can't just be what we had. This needs that extra level of detail that we've been putting in Kingdoms ever since, you know, the last 10 years. So that's, I went back to Grant and said, you know, we're going to flesh this one out. And he said, great, do it. So, you know, then he was able to kind of take what everybody had put together, expand that, put it in the book. But really that's the, you know, the lesson was people seem to really like these. And we, from some of the other ones that, so like Kaldor was only Kaldor and T'Shaal because T'Shaal is huge. So it was only those two places. But then when we've done some of the other ones, you know, Meldrin had two cities, Thardic Republic had two cities, but Orbal had a handful. And it was kind of a, you know, we had this castle, we had that keep, we had this castle, a wilderness site. But there was kind of a theme that ran through them that kind of around the Yharn Rebellion. So it was kind of a locations that kind of have a story to them. And so that was something that when looking at, you know, Candae and what should go in it, you know, like I said, that Selvos was an early favorite, but it's, I think we can tell the story, like Carrie said, we can tell the story better by having these other, you know, we can have these other elements in it. And, you know, we've got the North, you know, with the religious conflict, but let's spread things out and, you know, do it that way. So those were some of the lessons, were just kind of what's worked in the other ones, what have people really liked, and, you know, that's what we did with some of that extra time that we had to put it together.
Tell me a little bit about the, like, the visuals of Candae and what separates it from some of the other kingdoms. When we think about Kaldor, you know, we've got knights on horseback, we've got, you know, some of those things. What gives Candae, you know, its kind of visual distinctiveness?
And, you know, I sort of try to come up with themes for the kingdoms. And, like, if you look at Wrethem, a lot of my research involved looking at biker gangs and thugs and criminals and just, you know, people who looked like they'd been in a fight and wanted to be in a fight. And I think in Candae, it's more, I mean, it's similar, you know, same timeline, but it edges towards more high medieval. So, you know, I gave them a little bit more longer hair, more of the glorious knighthood, the guys that are kind of proud of, you know, being chivalrous. And so they're cleaner, you know, I guess. And so I just tried to tidy them up. And so there's a little bit more, I don't know, fanciness to their outfits. And so, I mean, some of that stuff. I mean, I think visually the towns look similar, you know, but again, you know, like Alias to me feels, you know, like a much more fancy city that you'd like to visit. You know, it has more theaters and it had, you know, it's just a beautiful place. So I gave the feel of the dock to that one. It's a little, it almost feels like you're sailing into Venice or something to me. I mean, it's just a beautiful city. And so, so that's, I guess that's what I would say. And the counterpoint to that is I also, you know, as has been said, you know, as much as we talk about the Lorrainians, you know, feeling like they're doing right, I love to show them doing horrible things, you know? So multiple times I like to show the Lorrainians who are hanging someone for the right, what they believe to be the right reason. So I often do a counterpoint. So like Wrathom has an Agrican knight burning a Lyrannian priest at the fire, and then Candace has a Lyrannian who's just killed an Agrican, you know, so it's, I kind of try to, you know, bookmark the kingdoms a little bit to make them all kind of flow back and forth. So that's sort of my thoughts.
Excellent. And for the folks that are aware of your illustration style, where you frequently map things out in SketchUp or a similar program, can they look forward to some of those on your YouTube in the near future?
Yeah, Metacod's on YouTube. And it's, as usual, I mean, it's funny, I only needed one scene, one small scene, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And so I just kept modeling and modeling. I modeled the whole city. And so I went a little bit nuts, and that castle is just so cool. I mean, it's the most impressive castle on Harn, I believe. I mean, it's right up there. So
one of them, yeah.
I went pretty nuts on it. And just, and then the funny thing about the, what ended up being the main image was I talked to Brent, I almost drew the wrong thing, because the symbol in the courtyard in front of the temple, I thought was a statue. I misread the map, and I was going to put a statue of Mendez, the winged lion that is a symbol for Lyrannians. And Brent's like, no, that's the stockade, you know? So I ended up having to change it. So I ended up putting the stockade there. And then I thought, oh, we'll have a hanging. That'd be a great thing to show looking past the castle, or looking past the stockades of a hanging at the castle in the background. And then I sort of create a story. So I don't want to say exactly who the guy is that's up there, but I will say for me, I made him look like he has Ilvirin clothes on. So maybe he's an Ilvirin, you know, so it's up to you to say, but he, that was sort of what I had in my head. Maybe some people were going through the kingdom on a crusade or to
pilgrimage,
pilgrimage, and got picked up and ended up in trouble. So, and then the nice thing about the one nice thing I will say about Candace that I was excited about, that I'm also excited about for the Elven Kingdom, is these were kind of the first two big projects I did 20 years ago. And, you know, a lot of this stuff made me cringe, you know, just in how I work differently now. And, you know, I think I'm getting better every year, I think. And so it was a nice chance to revisit some of the old art. And I ended up drawing over a bunch of them, you know, kind of tweaking them and cleaning them up, and redid a few that really hurt my feelings. So so it was nice to kind of bring it back visually to the same quality, hopefully, that the other ones have.
This, I will say, Kerry, that Candace's first day was the biggest of any of the Kickstarters for Columbia Games. It brought in more on day one than any of the other ones.
Any theories as to why?
I'd like to think that it's people have been, the excitement of getting, you know, that they've been getting all of these, and it's like, there's another one, got to get that one too. And so the word is out amongst the people who, I mean, we've seen each of these has pretty much grown, you know, not everyone is better than the one before it, but they've gotten, you know, more and more. And I think that, you know, there's new users. We've definitely seen that there are new customers. There's new people showing up on the Harn forum saying, oh, I bought the, you know, I learned about this from the book, or I bought this from the Kickstarter after watching this podcast, and this kind of thing. So getting the word out is working. People are buying these. And I think that, you know, for this, it's like, I already know I'm going to buy it, so I'm just going to get it on day one. Why wait till day 25? So I think a lot of the people who, my guess will be that we'll see, you know, that huge number on day one, it'll really quiet down, and then there'll be a little bit at the end. But just the if I look at the other ones, the day one were all, or most of them were between like 40 and 50% of total sales happened on day one. I'll be really interested to see where this one goes, but we won't know that for 30 days or 27 days now. But
But
that's a strong start.
one
It's a
of the
good
things
start.
that we consciously did when we started it was I had a discussion with Grant about making sure that each book was all exact matching height, all exact, the font was all, so that it would all line up on your bookcase, and then you'd have to buy them all because the completist among us all is like, oh, well, I couldn't miss one and be have a non-matching set. So
Well, I will tell you, I was not happy with how they did it for the Expanse books. Those did not line up. The fonts were different. It was, I'm right there with
Oh,
you.
that's just that was one of the things I said to Grant, is that we have to make the length of the books about the same within a few pages of each other, so that they all are the same size on the bookcase and they all are the same font and the colors are all matching with the headers, just so that when they all line up on the bookshelf. And I'll be honest, I've already been talking about future books. Once we get the kingdoms done, there are a lot more other books that I'd like to see done. And so that bookshelf, could keep growing.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean,
gotta get those shelfies.
we already know that Kaldor, Castles and Keeps of Kaldor is easily another two books, probably another couple of books for Candé down the road. There's easily another couple of books for each of the kingdoms. But then there's all those wilderness locations. There's the occupations, the guilds, the different religious orders and
The
religions.
bestiary.
Yeah, so there's all sorts of things that could be done in future books. So yeah, there that shelf can just grow and grow.
Well, this has been an excellent discussion, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me. I'm sure we will be back at some point this year, perhaps if Shibasa hits Kickstarter later. But again, thanks for joining me. Always a pleasure.